Welcome to the Two Regular Teachers podcast. My name is Rick Kayla Thompson.
My name's Adam Lavaz. Thanks for joining us for episode 43. And I'm sitting next to this evening a very happy man, a very happy Geelong supporter, mate. How are you feeling? Patrick Dangerfield. I know this is not teaching related, but Patrick Dangerfield's on board. How are you feeling?
It's interesting how I'm feeling, Adam, because I think I've got a right as a Geelong supporter to be feeling excited about the coming season. You know, some good trading. I'm giving you a serious answer. But the amount of vitriol in the workplace at the moment at my school from non-Geelong supporters.
Really?
About Geelong's trades over the last few days. It's unbelievable. They are so angry. But you know what? I have to cut them a tiny bit of slack because I understand that it's the Geelong Advertiser, perhaps, and the way that Geelong sometimes is a bit of saturation in the town.
It is. I think the anger is a little bit of jealousy as well.
It has to be.
Yeah.
But finally, Adam, what was interesting is that I mentioned it to my students. A lot of them didn't react. And I think that goes to show maybe that AFL, Aussie Rules, it's a changing landscape. In the next generation coming through, soccer, cricket, even rugby to some extent, is starting to get more of a foothold, particularly soccer in primary schools.
Yeah, definitely soccer. I think, I don't know about you, but I still get the AFL emails about AFL in schools. And I know a lot of the clubs go out there and actually, I know Melbourne does a reading program and a lot of the schools in the area and send players out and do that. So I think they are on the front foot. But you're definitely right. There is more saturation from other sports within schools.
I just think when you and I were young, if there was an announcement like that where a major player was going to a different club, nearly every kid would really be like, oh, really, are they? But I got no reaction at all. It was really interesting.
That is very interesting.
Just a couple of smiles from a couple of kids, that was it.
Particularly for a player of his calibre, you'd think there'd be a little bit more excitement. But
We've got our 3-6 school concert tomorrow night, Adam, and the junior school concert was tonight. And look, I must say I'm looking forward to that. And the big revelation, I am getting up in the Teachers Act, Adam.
Well done, well done.
And I've got my 90s rapper outfit ready to go. I'll just leave it there. I don't want to talk any more about it.
90s rapper outfit, it could be Eminem, could be MC Hammer, could be a bit of Vanilla Ice Baby.
It's hammer time, let me just say it. But we've got an interesting episode tonight, Adam. We've got some things about what it's like to be a teacher in terms of the emotional side of it. Yeah, we've got lots we want to say, haven't we?
We have. So stop podcast time. So Rick, I want to kick it off actually tonight with a bit of a serious topic. I'm sure a lot of people out there have heard about recently the police officer who took her own life at work recently, and the discussion around a lot of police officers out there that are actually very highly stressed, and that a lot of them have taken their own lives over the last few years. It really got me thinking that you and I, particularly last term, and I know this term, have talked about stress in the workplace. And obviously, we don't necessarily want to go that far and that sort of morbid with things like suicide. But it really got me thinking. It really got me thinking of my staff team and me personally about, you know, the pressures that we as teachers and the students are under that are forcing not just teachers but everyone in the workforce to these sorts of things. And you have to think to yourself, what is going on in the workplace that is causing people to want to take their own lives? It really is something to think about.
Well, it begins somewhere, doesn't it, Adam? That stress does begin somewhere. And I guess that's what we kind of wanted to touch on. And we certainly aren't going to pretend to be experts at all, because we know that depression and stress levels can be triggered by all sorts of things. But I guess we're kind of interested in maybe where some of this starts. And we were talking off air, weren't we, about equating our profession with police work and nurses, like those public service kind of jobs. Very different jobs, but still they are linked in some ways, aren't we? Because we are dealing with very emotional jobs, dealing with the general public. And I noticed you shared another article during the week in our planning about VCE anxiety, which was in the Geelong Advertiser, and that how many kids between the ages of 15 and 18 are calling up.
It's the worried sick line. It's the worried sick line that people can ring up for Headspace and those sorts of places where they're actually ringing up. And one of the ones that stuck out to me was since 2012, 6,000 year 10, 11 and 12 students have been treated for acute mental health conditions. Now, there are a lot of other statistics in there, and I would actually encourage people to go and read it. When do we actually have to sit back and start taking stock of what we're doing? When do the people higher up, right at the top, see these sorts of statistics and go, you know what? Something's not working. We need to actually get out there and get our hands dirty and get back to basics and understand what we're putting the staff and the students through to get to some of these goals that we want to reach. Because if it's getting to these levels, something's not right.
Yeah, well said. Let's talk about students for a second, because we know that the VCE program is it's obviously got a lot of positives in terms of the work that students complete, but it's become more stressful even in probably the last few years than it was when you and I completed BCE, isn't it, Adam? I think, you know, the pressure to get good scores to get into everything. Now, we've talked on the podcast about the score to get into teaching being lifted and that it deserves that, but at the same time you think, well, it's quite, you know, if I'm a student, I've got to aim for a high score, the stress levels rise, don't they?
And
the article in the Advertiser did talk about how there is so much pressure, not just on kids attaining great scores, but also on the selections they make for university, or the career selections they make.
And that would come from a variety of areas. I mean, how often have you heard over the years families actually pressuring kids to go a certain way and to do a certain thing because, well, that's what the family did, or that's what dad did, or those sorts of things. And also, how many people do you hear of these days that don't necessarily get a great score who end up getting into the course they want to anyway? They might take a year off and do something else and then go into that one and become really successful. Where are the schools? Where is the support? Where are these people higher up actually saying, you know what, the score you get is simply a score. It doesn't really matter in a big way, unless you want to get into something obviously really, really high up. I can understand that. But there are a lot of other courses there that you can move into as you go along. I mean, we know a lot of people who in our course went into teaching as mature age students. Mm. Like you were one of those. A few of our other friends were that as well.
Yep.
And they've been hugely successful as teachers and in what they want to do. So where's that support? Where are we telling kids, you know what, don't stress. You're going to succeed and go and be what you want to be anyway.
Well, what we know now that's better at high schools is that there's different avenues for kids to find the kind of job they want in life, isn't there? They can do a vocation and those sorts of studies through their own high school. Now, back when you and I were there, it really did feel like when you had your career lessons, it was just focusing on university. And I remember panicking a bit because I didn't quite know what I wanted to do when it was getting late in the year 12 year. And I started feeling guilty about that. And I think what you just said about mature age students is that students need to know that it's okay if they're not 100% sure at 18 years old, because you might not know for a little while.
Mm.
Interesting that one of the researchers, the headspace manager, Malcolm Scott, in the article says that some students get through secondary school unscathed, that they achieve a good 8R score, they go to university, but can fall apart in the first or second year of tertiary studies. Now, there's no, I mean, they finish their VCE exams, party time, but then straight back into it. There's no downtime for them. And for some students, not all, that could be where, I can understand where that is, where they could capitulate.
Yeah, absolutely. And you could link university really to the real world. I mean, this is it really. The apron strings have almost been cut. When you go to high school, you really do have more of that support. You've got the teachers you know, you've got your mates, you've got all these things. But when you go to a certain university, you might have one or two people you know. And I think you and I have actually spoken about this together on the podcast, about that first day where you and I turned up, and I turned up and looked around, didn't know anyone, saw you.
Across the foyer.
Across the foyer. Yeah. No, not the foyer, but we saw each other early on in the get-to-know-you sessions and things.
And the romantic music started playing.
And we came over, yeah, at last. That one's like that. But you really are in the real world, and to be able to do all these assignments and do these things, and now all of a sudden you've got a part-time job and all these things are happening. Students aren't actually supported about how to get to that next step and what to do when they get there.
Yeah, great. And it's interesting just going through the article just finally to see that some of the psychologists they've spoken to who are speaking to some of these stressed students have actually expressed the fact that some students feel like there is too much expectation and they don't have enough choice. So isn't it funny that we believe there is enough choice these days? Maybe some of the students aren't feeling it. So it's a really interesting topic. We probably haven't touched on staff much, but I think
we have though. I mean, last week we've spoken about it, haven't we, mate? We've really looked at that and encouraged. Last week we encouraged a lot of teachers out there to make sure that they look after themselves this term. And this is something that's come up in the last week with this police officer and the anxiety things, that is further proof that we need to look after ourselves. You need to sit back and go, if I'm really stressed and I'm running myself into the ground, something's got to change. I've really got to change my outlook. I've got to change my approach. But I think there needs to be more support for teachers to be able to do that.
I think so. And look, the two-year VCE program was meant to be, was made easier than the HSC because it was based on regular assessments as well as exams. But my final thing I want to say is I still feel like there's still pressure for that end of year performance.
Yeah, I agree. And you and I went through it, didn't we? A lot of that writing and that sort of stuff. And should it be on that? Because we don't really want to have that on our kids in primary school all the time. So what does that change in high school?
Exactly. So I guess, you know, if you've got thoughts on these issues, particularly our secondary teacher listeners, you know, who are teaching VCE, we'd love to hear some comments. Adam, I was reading an article that came from The Conversation this month, And the headline was, "The emotional workload of teachers is too often ignored." Now, we've talked about things like this in the podcast before, but the article opens with research that shows that nearly one in three Australian teachers are so unhappy in their profession that they consider leaving within their first 5 years of employment. Now, we've mentioned some of these kind of stats before, that perhaps it says 10% of teachers may have already made up their mind to leave by their second year. These are all quite damning stats, but the article kind of focuses on how we can look after ourselves in the profession to help us get through, maybe particularly that early stage, help graduates get through, to manage the emotional reaction to the profession. So I kind of, with this discussion, I kind of don't want to go down the fact of, oh, we need more time off, or we need, because it's not that. It's about how do we manage this really personal job, this job where you put, I think to be a good teacher, you've really got to give yourself to it. You've got to give some of your personal attributes to it, emotionally. You open yourself up, don't you?
Like, yeah, you do. And there's a lot of positives in the job, but at the same time, there are a lot of times where things don't work. You're in the classroom, you think you've got this wonderful lesson going on, and it just goes belly up. You have a parent come in that just slams you, you know, about something that's happening in the yard with the kids, and they haven't got the full story, and it's your fault and things. It's really easy to bottle that up, isn't it? It's really easy to stew on that all day, and it affects you personally, it affects your teaching, and I don't think we're very good at getting that out.
If there are people out there who can do that, who can actually switch off, like deal with all this stuff and then switch off when they go home, I can't speak for them, and that's fine if they can, but I speak for myself. Now, I have no shame admitting it at 36 years old, but I'm a pretty sensitive bloke, and I sometimes will react to things maybe more so than what others might. It's kind of in my nature, and I'm aware of it. But I think people like myself who maybe are a little bit sensitive, are more sensitive, are more prone to really going over those things that happen with the kids at school, those successes and those failures. And I think at school, rarely in schools, is there that chance to formally reflect on maybe some of those emotional moments that you have in the classroom, like you said, with students and teachers and parents as well.
And that's right. And I think that comes back to feeling a bit silly. You know, you bring up a failure to your colleagues, there's that instant feeling of, to yourself, that they're judging me. Oh, well, he's not doing a good job, or, oh, come on, you should have handled that better, or that. That's not what it's about, and I think we need to get out of that mindset. I think imagine if there was the opportunity where you've had that bad morning, and there was someone in the school who was designated to be this support person that you could shoot off an email and go, look, had a shocking morning. Can we catch up after school for a cuppa for 10 minutes? Where that person just sits and doesn't judge and listens over a cuppa and a caramel slice, and that teacher, without judgment, just gets to sit and talk and go, look, this just didn't work this morning, it didn't happen, and you can either, that person can either give advice or just listen and give that support without that judgment, because that's what we're worried about, that people are going to think we're not doing a good job, particularly younger teachers.
I think you're absolutely right, and this is where for first year graduates, this is where their mentor comes in, but who knows whether that mentor is always doing that for them. Now, I'm happily, and I will name them, I'll say their first names. In my first year of teaching, I had two teachers. I had Abby, who was next door to me, and I had Virginia, who were two of the best mentors that I could ever possibly have, who actually listened to that emotional, because I learned to trust them really quickly and was able to kind of show my emotions in terms of reacting to some of the things that happened in the classroom, and they were so helpful. Now, this is not happening though with every single person we know.
No, it's not, and you would have known. The trust would have been there because you would have had privacy. You would have known that you could go to them with, ask for some advice, or look, this didn't work out, and you knew that that's where it stayed.
But the key was that I had that trust, getting back to what you said before, I had the trust that it wasn't going to be seen as weak or incompetent. And I think you're right. If you don't, if that trust relationship is not there with the mentor and the graduate, then the graduate might feel like, well, they don't want to come across as weak, as you said. So they might just bottle it up because I've got to look like I can nail this job so I can get re-employed for the next contract.
And that other discussion comes back to having other teachers who go, you know what, I've done it too. Because sometimes I think things muck up and you feel isolated. You feel like I'm the only one that's mucking up. Everyone else's room is looking great. And you know what teachers are really, really good at, Rick? If teachers are really, really good at coming into the staff room and talking very loudly about their successes. They come in and go, oh, should have seen the lesson I did this morning. Oh, I had this kid doing this, I had this kid doing that. And if you've had a bad morning, you sit there and go, well, it looks like I'm the only one who's struggling, which is not the case, because we're really good at trumpeting our good things. People keep very quiet about the bad things, and having that opportunity to talk to someone and go, you know what, I've done that too, and have that reinforcement, I'm okay, I'm not different, absolutely, I'm normal, is really important.
Even experienced teachers sometimes find it hard to admit those failings. And just the final thing from the article is, the writer is actually was working on a doctorate graduate and is a teacher, and says that one of the things that they indicate in their research is what schools could do is give an opportunity to regularly debrief in a formal setting and reflect on the challenging incidents that may have emotionally affected the teacher, and try and reframe the incidents in a way that maybe changes their thinking or helps them in further episodes. And I mean, we think this something is at least the smallest emotional moment is happening every single day in this profession, isn't it? You don't go through a day where there's not one interaction that I think about where did I handle that well? How was the kid feeling? You know, all that sort of stuff.
Yep. You always do that. And that's just a part of being a teacher, isn't it, mate? So look, we'd love to hear from people about if there's something in their school that this sort of stuff happens where you have that support, you've had a wonderful mentor. I'm happy to throw it there as well. My mentor in first year, Kelly, was absolutely brilliant and really helped make my first year an absolute winner too. So if you've got anything there, we'd love to hear from you.
Absolutely.
Now, Rick, as you would know, I'm a very well-read man, and I like to read a lot of different things online. And one thing I do actually like to check up on from time to time is the New York Times. I just love reading articles, and one that came across recently, about a month ago now, was one that the headline said, "Teachers Aren't Dumb." Now, you and I would be quite happy to say, well, no, we're not. We might do dumb things from time to time, but we're not dumb. But the idea of the article was that too often teachers are made to feel dumb because they haven't had the right training. And this is something we spoke about off air about teachers. Some teachers feel very confident in maths, but not as confident in literacy, or vice versa. It's very rare you get a teacher who will happily go, "I feel confident about everything I'm teaching."
When you sent me the article during the week and I had a read, it made me think of how, well, the article actually says that what the American system needs to spit out more are teachers who are really even across the board and absolute experts. Now, I actually don't know that many people who are absolute experts in all the subjects they've got to teach, particularly in primary. So I find it hard to believe that you can actually still get someone who can be absolutely passionate and absolutely 100% perfect in every subject. Because I go back to gardeners in multiple intelligences. We've still got those areas of ourselves that are in our genes that we're better at than others.
Absolutely we are. And I really love the quote there that says, and again, it is American education, but it really is applicable here. But the problem in American education is not dumb teachers. The problem is dumb teacher training. Now, I certainly at no point, Rick, do I want to lambast the Deakin training and what we've done there, because I think a lot of it is, and I think they're getting a lot better, and it's really, really good. But I think it does come back to the idea that there needs to be different focuses. We need to really be teaching the, you know, people up. And do you think there needs to be more electives? If you come in and go, you know what, I'm really confident with my maths, I've got a really good knowledge here, could I take more electives to build up my knowledge of literacy? Could I build up my knowledge of something else and really focus there, rather than trying to fit all these little bits in and only kind of scratching the surface? Do we need to have, you know, that option to have more electives?
Yeah, possibly. And maybe it's happening these days. Maybe the university needs to match with the curriculum more so that the subjects that are getting taught the most in schools are the ones that you can choose. Now, I took the language and literature major, which, knowing that, well, it's my passion, but also knowing that, I mean, that was going to be first and foremost in my profession. But there were probably some electives that, you know, you really don't have to teach so much, you know.
I still remember, mate. First year, do you remember the first year doing science?
Yes.
The first year doing science and looking at all these, I don't know, we'd even call them, I can't even remember, but we went out and did all these, you know, day trips, and we looked at things, and I have not used that once. And I still remember sitting in there doing it going, when am I going to use this? If I actually, this is what I wanted to teach, then I would have been happy to do it. But I had no, as a primary school teacher, I wanted to do primary teaching, I had no interest in that. It was ridiculous,
yeah,
almost.
Yeah, I remember that, those subjects. I think there maybe it kind of was lacking in maybe the content that we really needed to know for our job, but I guess they were coming from a different faculty, weren't they?
They were
so
totally
it's
different.
Interesting. So maybe it's changed now, and people at university can tell us now. Are they putting these kind of science subjects into the education faculty? An interesting thing that they said was that they believe that in the American system that there's perhaps too much at universities on just the general pedagogy and not enough, like you said, on the specialist teaching. Now, I think that's a great idea. Now, you and I finished up really doing exams in our course, if I remember rightly, at the end of second year. After that, it was you were just assessed on the papers you'd write.
Yep.
Is there a case for some kind of exam process at the end of a teacher course to test out people's knowledge in what they've learned, like maths abilities, because that's what they need to know?
I think it has merit. I really think it has merit. I think there needs to be something there, but I also think that there needs to be a better discussion between schools about teaching rounds and actually what you know, what the students are actually doing on their teaching, because that's where it is, and that's the nuts and bolts of teaching, and whether or not, you know, a teacher's too easy. Like, I know it's quite hard, I find it quite hard to be critical of a teacher coming through because of that sort of conversation, but do we need to learn to be more critical and say, you know what, you what I've noticed is you really need to improve your maths knowledge, you need to go away and you need to work on that, you know, second year or third year and things, you need to go away and concentrate on these things rather than just going, yeah, you're going all right, and you're giving me that feedback, and off they go and they do these things, they don't really know where they're got to improve. But that's where maybe that exam comes in as well.
For sure. If we ever get Cara Johnson on the show again, we'll need to ask her how her job that she's told us about at Deakin has evolved to see whether that's been happening. Final thing I wanted to say is that I guess some teachers, and it's following on from what you just said, some teachers have to brush up on the stuff that they're about to teach. So particularly if you're working at your year level at the moment, it's sort of year two, year one, if the following year you're moving up to year six, I know that a lot of teachers get nervous about teaching some of that higher concept stuff with fractions and decimals and algebra. But I mean, if you're not using it, like, you're not going to know. So I think there's a case for just brushing up yourself and not feeling like you've got to know all this stuff all the time, 100%.
Absolutely. And I did that when I first started teaching 5-6. I had to go away and brush up a little bit because I hadn't touched it since high school. And that's 5 or 6 years when you're not using it. It's easy to forget. So anyway, look, teachers, we aren't dumb, but there is some merit for the idea that the teacher training and what they go through could still use a little bit of a touch-up. But we know from talking to Cara and from the discussions with other people at Deakin that and other universities, it's certainly improving.
Okay, Adam, now your first anecdote for Term 4. Over to you.
It is, mate. And this one actually came up from earlier in the week, and it's I want to talk about the innocence of youth and students not understanding maybe what certain words or certain things actually are because they're innocent, they haven't known. And something happened. I'll talk about this story from earlier in the week, but I want to talk about one when I first started at the school I'm currently at. It might have been the first year or two, and I want to set the scene for you. I'm out on yard duty, and I've got a couple of kids. You know, I'm teaching 5-6, so the 5-6s either walk around with you, or I've just been shooting a few hoops or whatever, and it's coming around a corner, and one of the preps is there, and he's with a couple of his mates, and he runs up and he goes, Miss Lavaz, stuck both middle fingers up at me. And he stuck both middle fingers up at me, like, Miss Lavaz. Like he was giving two thumbs up.
He just flipped you two birds.
Flipped me instead. Two birds instead of giving me the thumbs up. Now, I want to talk about the innocence of youth, because he legitimately thought that was just being friendly. He had gotten it from home or somewhere else.
Who's told him that?
But he's a preppy. He's a little preppy, and I know this prep now going through the school that
you're like
that
one was of his legitimately... uncles. One of his uncles has stitched him up on a Sunday barbecue. Well, and he's going to school tomorrow, and
you know, he probably has, or he's caught someone doing it, going, "What does that mean?" And they're going, it means you're silly biscuit." You know, it means it just means like a thumbs up. So he's come up to me and done this. Now the 5-6s that were with me at the time, Cullen, looked at me in absolute disbelief, as if to say, he's just given the teacher the bird. He's just flipped the teacher the bird. He didn't know. I had to pull him aside and say, "Now listen, mate, you know, we can't do that at school." So, he actually legitimately thought. And what reminded me of this was in class earlier in the week, because we're doing swimming, and in the last sort of half an hour when we get back, there's not a lot to do. I let them do a bit of colouring, a little bit of busy work, and I put a bit of music on. And we were just sort of doing that, and they were kind of distracted, and a teacher came in.
Can I just
in.
Ask a question, Adam?
Go for it.
Sorry to our listeners for interrupting, Adam. You don't put... I know you're a death metal fan. You don't put death metal on, do you, for the grade 2?
No, I don't. I'll get to the story about what I put on and what happened, because this is another part of it, actually.
But
one of the teachers came in and actually said, tomorrow you're going to go down and... because we go down half an hour early to plan the fun park down at Leisure Link, and one of the kids has got a bit excited and wanted to get into it, and has forgotten the a bit of the fun bit, and going, "Yeah, we're going down to the FARC tomorrow." Like, "We're going down to the FARC, right?" None of the kids had any idea, and I'm over sort of giggling. The teacher is going, "What?" You know, I said, "No, don't worry about it." Because previous to that, I'm sorry to keep waffling on here, when I had to put Taylor Swift's "Shake It Off" on. And I, as doing a joke, I changed the kid's name, put the kid's name in it. So I'm going, you know, I'll make up this name, but Johnny Off, like that. One of the kid's names is Jax. And so he went, do my name. So the other kid started going, "Jax Off." "Jax Off." And I go, no, we won't be singing that one. We won't be singing that one. But it was more...
Hang on, when you said that, didn't they go, "The almighty question? Why, Mr. LaVar?"
I said, "It's time to change the song. But I thought... kids sometimes learn things that they don't actually understand. So have you actually had that happen for you in 5-6s, 3-4s, things where kids have maybe said something or dropped something that you just thought, I don't think they understand what they're talking about.
I can't think of any. Comes to mind. Sometimes you overhear them pronounce something like you did with the fuck.
Yeah.
You hear things pronounced and it kind of turns your head, and then maybe they weren't saying anything. Yep. But I've got nothing like that. I think really? That's extremely unique. Yeah.
Really? Because I thought about this yesterday, I was thinking about it's my turn to do the anecdote, and you get a bit nervous sometimes, you know, what am I going to come up with? I thought, oh, surely... Even a kid's just going, oh, you bang the table and go, God damn it, or just done something that is just sort of out of the ordinary that you just kind of don't expect.
Well, I certainly heard some swear words being dropped at U6 camp, and while the boys were playing in their cabin, or you know, tidying up some free time, and I happened to be walking past, they didn't know I was there, and a choice word was dropped, and I had to talk to them about, you know, anyone could be walking past, but you have to pick your battles too. Like I didn't think it was worth ripping through them when I heard it, but I still don't think that beats your story.
Now they put themselves though. When you catch them swearing and they say something and they look over and see you watching, the colour drains from their face. They're going, he heard that, he heard me just swear, and I know that's what they're... And what I actually come back to when I hear a kid swear, I actually say, have you ever heard me swear at school? And the kid will look at you and go, no. I said, well, if I don't feel the need to use that language, you shouldn't need to use it either. And that's when they kind of go, you know, fair enough. Yeah. I don't model it, I don't do it, so you shouldn't use it at school.
And with the students you and I teach, that strategy generally works, doesn't it?
Mm.
If you've got anything to match Adam's story, please throw us a line.
So, mate, that brings an end to episode 43 on a beautiful evening. And we must say that next week we are going to have an episode of some sort up, but it is for Geelong people like us. It is the Geelong Cup day off next Wednesday.
We get a public holiday on Wednesday because of a horse race, Adam. I've always found that odd.
Yeah, I found it odd too, because it used to be... Do you remember when we were in primary school? We used to get Geelong Show Friday and Gala Day. We used to get Gala Day, or however you want to say. We used to get 2 days off, and then they changed everything to the middle of the week.
There was quite an uproar about the new public holiday on the day before the Aussie Rules Grand Final, but we've had this horse riding event... Yep. A public holiday for a long time.
Why is it so important?
I'm not sure. Yeah. That's something that we can talk about next week. So we will be coming to you with possibly a shortened episode next week, depending on how our time falls with the public holiday. But leave it be said that there will definitely be a two regular teachers episode, one way or another.
We're not going to let you guys down. So, from me, Adam Lavaz.
Me, Rick Kayla Thompson, and we've both been two regular teachers.